Something else I love, wild, wild weekend with UFC 261. Joining us to talk about that is somebody who covers MMA and boxing for Yahoo Sports. He is a legend of the game. He is a friend of the program. He is Kevin Ioli. Kevin, good to have you back. How are you?
I'm good, Jim. What a show that was, wasn't it?
Oh, man. Wild, Kevin. Really a wild, wild night. There's so much to talk about regarding UFC 261, but let me start with Chris Weidman. You know that pretty much anything can happen in that sport, and you've seen everything happen in that sport, but I've got to ask, what was your reaction when you saw his leg snap the way it did as early as it did against Uriah Hall?
Obviously, it's sickening to see that, but it really, my heart just went out to Chris. I mean, I know what he's been through in his career and what he's trying to do, trying to get back to the championship level. And to see that, you know, after all the hard work he did, 17 seconds into the fight, to have that kind of injury, which he provided an update today from his hospital bed where he said, you know, 6 months to a year before he can get back. I mean, that could, you know, absolutely be career crushing for him. And so you just had to feel horrible personally for Chris more than anything else.
I agree with that. You know, and also, Kevin, when you look at that, how much is that injury to Weidman a reminder of the stakes for every single fighter, every single time they step into the cage? And that really, I mean, that's something I think a lot of fans either don't know, don't think about, or forget. But the stakes that are they're up against, or how high they are every single time one of these guys steps in.
It's no exaggeration to say they're risking their lives. You know, I have covered the fights for so long that in boxing, I have sat ringside for seven fighters who passed away as a result of injuries in the ring, including one who fell through the ropes and fell right on top of me. And so I think I know as well as anybody what these men and women, you know, risk in order to pursue their dream of a championship and making a better life for themselves and their families. And I think, you know, that's why when referees stop fights too soon, you know, you might say, hey, I didn't agree with the stoppage, but you understand why they're doing it, because you know what these men and women are risking in there. And so you have to just have some understanding to say, you know what, I may disagree with the exact time that fight was stopped, but I understand why it was stopped in that regard.
Right. That was catastrophic. But there were three championship fights that were amazing on that fight card. Kevin Ioli is joining us. You spoke with Bullet Valentina Shevchenko in the build-up to this weekend. You introduced her as one of the greatest fighters that you have ever seen in your life. It's really high praise, but deservedly so. I know that's not something you throw around lightly. What had you seen from her before UFC 261 that made you feel that way?
Well, you just look at, you know, how she has dominated great fighters. I mean, she was had a dominant win at an upper weight class over Holly Holm, the champion that beat Ronda Rousey. I mean, she just dominates Holly Holm. She was very good at 135. She fights Amanda Nunes twice, and Amanda is widely regarded as the greatest ever. And Valentina could have won both of those fights, especially the second fight in Edmonton that went to a split decision, easily could have gone Valentina's way. And then there's no weakness in her game. She can do everything. And I think one of the things you saw out of her, you know, you saw her competitive side came out. Jessica Andrade talked a little bit before the fight, and Andrade said, I don't think Valentina has good wrestling. So what did Valentina do? She went out there and wrestled and was 7-for-7 in takedowns. And I think she told Jessica Andrade, do you think I have a weakness? Okay, well, we'll see if I have a weakness. And it was Andrade whose wrestling was a weakness, not Valentina's. Valentina is just such a great and smart martial artist. She's well-rounded. There's nothing she doesn't do extraordinarily well. And she just has a great temperament for the game as well.
And she made that very clear, Kevin, after the fight, right? When she said, I don't have a weakness. You're all looking for my weakness. There are no weaknesses. And the seven takedowns I thought were amazing. She had a great, great showing. Then after that, you had Thug Rose also with an enormous showing.
Wow.
What do you make of her mindset going to that fight?
I mean, it's almost comical when you watch her and Pat Barry there, you know, you're the best, I'm the best, and the way it was like he was trying to hypnotize her before the fight. But, you know, it works for her, and she, you know, Rose is different than a lot of other people, and she really trains her mind as much as she trains her body for these fights. And, you know, like, I honestly will say, like, I knew Rose was good enough to win the fight, but I didn't give her a lot of chance in the fight because I thought Wiley is just, it's such another level. And the kind of fighters that Rose historically has had difficulty with her been the women who are strong, physical, and that certainly was Wiley. And so I felt like Wiley would be able to handle her. But, you know, Rose, obviously well coached. They looked and they saw a weakness in her game, and Rose was able to exploit it. And it was remarkable. I mean, you know, what a precision kick that she threw, and then she finished it on the ground very quickly. I know some people might want to say, including Wiley, that it was a quick stoppage, but you know, I don't think you can argue with that. You know, she went down, hit her head on the canvas. Rose landed three good hammer fists. You know, that's about time when there are clean shots like that, that the referee needs to be waving it off. And I thought did correctly in that instance.
I agree. Kevin Ioli is my guest. I agree with you. Wiley, I understand why somebody as good and as proud as she is thought that was premature, but I'm not going to argue against that. I think that the referee got that one right. And that kick was absolutely legendary. So where does that leave Rose? Where does she go from here?
You know, I think she's going to rematch Wiley. I think, you know, it's kind of like Conor McGregor from this standpoint. Wiley has that huge fan base in China. And there's no other clear-cut person in that division where you say, this person has to be the next title shot. That person doesn't exist right now. There's a lot of good fighters that you could make an argument for. You know, the one I would make an argument for if it wasn't a rematch would be Mackenzie Dern. But you, when you sit there and you look at it and you say, Wiley got caught with one shot, early in a fight, you know, she's had a good championship run. You know, she's been an amazing champion, and she's probably the best fighter in that division other than the champion. I think, you know, then you add on to that she has that huge fan base and the inroads that she's helping the UFC make in the Chinese and Asian marketplace. I don't think there's any question they're going to go with a rematch. And you saw a little bit of evidence of how big MMA is becoming in China. There was four Chinese fighters on that card on Saturday, and those other three were specifically on there because they knew they'd have a big audience watching Wiley.
Kevin Ioli is joining us. I'd watch that again. In fact, I'd like to see that again for the point you just made. She got caught a really good shot early in the fight, and everybody in that sport loses, as we know, except maybe Usman. Maybe Usman has won 14 straight in the UFC and 18 straight overall. Kevin, go back. Like, the final fight of the night was so great. But if we go back to the first meeting, Usman didn't just win a unanimous decision. He won 14 of the 15 rounds as scored by the judges. That said, not everybody was so impressed. What was the consensus or the general thinking about Usman coming out of that fight?
Well, I think coming out of the first fight, you know, he still didn't convince everybody. You know, there were some people that weren't sure his striking was up to the level that he could go out there and face a guy with hands like Masvidal when Masvidal was ready to fight. And I think people looked at him and said, yeah, he's a great wrestler, but, and they looked at who he had fought, subsequently. And I found it laughable, but, you know, they said, well, he fought Colby Covington, a wrestler. He won the title from Tyron Woodley, a wrestler. You know, he beat Gilbert Burns, a jiu-jitsu guy. You know, that's cutting those people short. Those are the best welterweights in the world. And he's, you know, really beating them handily. And you go back, and you even go back to the Demian Maia fight. And it's Demian Maia, Rafael Dos Anjos, Covington, Woodley, Burns, and Masvidal twice. I mean, what more does this guy have to do to get recognition from the crowd? I mean, I think he's, you know, I wrote one time before the fight, you know, it's kind of been heresy to say anybody's better than GSP in the welterweight division, but I certainly think you can make an argument for Usman now, and if you can't say it definitively now, I'll tell you, one or two more big wins like he's had, and you're going to have to say it, because what he is doing is remarkable.
Right, Kevin, stay on that point for a minute. Who would you take in their primes, GSP or Usman?
You know, I think that's a tough one. I think, you know, GSP striking was a little crisper in that, and GSP game planning, you know, maybe a little bit better. GSP was really good at, you know, kind of figuring out what your weakness was and how to attack that weakness. But GSP also got caught sometimes, Jim. You know, you look at the Matt Serra fight, you know, he had a couple losses where, you know, he wasn't right there. And Usman is so consistent that I think, you know, it's a really close fight and it could go either way. But I think you would have to say Kamaru Usman. I think Usman is just now coming into his prime. You know, he's had some injuries that have hampered him a little bit, right? You know, for a while he wasn't kicking a lot because he had leg injuries. He's now got the full package. And I'll tell you what, you know, you saw that combination he threw to end the fight. What a combination that was. That looked like a pro boxing combination, and puts Masvidal out for the first time in Masvidal's legendary career. You know, I think you got to lean toward Usman. I'm a believer. And he said to me on camera before, which I think is accurate, you know, each generation in MMA tends to get better. And I think, you know, he's facing, you know, consistently good competition. I think you got to give Usman the edge here.
I think you're right, Kevin. Nothing against GSP. who is one of the all-time greatest to ever do it, and certainly was at that time. But, man, you're right, that the sport evolves, the fighters evolve. Usman is getting better and better and better. I love Masvidal for all the reasons that I'm sure you like him as well. He's a great showman. He's great for the sport. He's extremely popular. He's electric. But, man, that knockout was spectacular. I mean, what did you make of that right hand, especially, quote, from a guy who doesn't strike that well?
Yeah. I mean, it was just like, I mean, that's one of the best right hands, you know, that you've ever seen from a UFC fighter. I mean, you know, just the combination he threw, the hook that started it. And I think, you know, you look at it and you break it down. The hook wasn't meant to land or damage. It was meant to kind of distract from the right hand. And everything he did kind of worked perfectly. And it was the perfect combination. He set it up with being at the right distance so that he could pull that off. Throws that hook, takes the attention away just for that split second, and ba-boom, and he lands that right hand. And he put you saw how much he turned so that when he went down, he was right there falling toward Masvidal to go on top of him. So, I mean, he put his entire body on it. He landed, you know, if you put an X on Masvidal's chin, he hit the X. And it was just an incredible finish. And, you know, give Masvidal full marks. I mean, to get up and to say what he said afterwards, you know, given the rivalry that existed between them, that was the first time he was ever stopped. And, you know, and he fought, you know, at 185. You know, this is a guy that for most of his career fought at 155. You know, he knocked out Darren Till at 185. So Masvidal is a tough guy with a great chin. And, you know, to go out cold like he did, that shows you, the punch that Usman landed.
I actually, Kevin, love the way Jorge handled himself after that fight. Number one, I have no idea how he got up. I have no idea how that man got up after taking that shot. But I love that he said afterwards, look, the guy's got my number, all right? He beat me fair and square. All the credit to him. I thought Jorge handled that. And I want to say one more thing about Masvidal. You can call this guy a journeyman. You can look at his record. When you consider where he started fighting in the streets of Miami, literally for the McDonald's dollar menu, and to put himself in the position he has, he's already won even if he got blown out. I think he's had an amazing run. Kevin, before you go, what do you make of the talk that Nick Diaz might actually fight for the first time in 6 years and he might come back? Can you see that happening? And if so, how so? How would that develop for him?
Well, you know, Dana said that, you know, that they talked and that there was going to be a fight. I'm going to be skeptical of this. I think there's an obvious fight for Nick Diaz, and that's Masvidal. To me, that is the fight if you bring him back. You know, the UFC doesn't like to give guys light touches, but Nick Diaz has been off 6 years. You know, he fought last in January of 2015 against Anderson Silva. I just find it hard to believe that, you know, 6.5 years later now, he's going to be able to come back. And Nick has, you know, kind of, you know, toyed with it a couple times, and we've heard he might come back, and then he hasn't. I'll believe it when I see it, Jim, but I think if they make the fight, if he does come back and they're going to put him in, a fight with him and Masvidal would just be off the hook. The trash talk alone would be worth the pay-per-view money. I mean, that would be really something to see, and I think it would be a really fun striking battle.
Oh, hell yes, I'm in for that. Sign me up. And then finally, Kevin, what do you make? What was it like, the vibe, to you to see a packed arena the way we did in Jacksonville? How different did that affect the dynamic of the fighters? Who, and you made a very good point. The fighters did an amazing job in recent months to fight without any fans in the stands. But what was it like to have a packed house?
Yeah, Jim, I mean, I think that, you know, the first fight that Liang, the Chinese fighter, I think, you know, she clearly showed what happened. She was affected by the crowd. I mean, she just stormed out. You know, the crowd went crazy when Bruce Buffer started the introduction. This guttural roar went up, and the place was really, really, really into it. And I think it affected every one of the fighters the entire night. I mean, they just couldn't believe what they were seeing. And I thought, like in the opening fight, it was a tremendous fight, and Carnelosi won the fight. But I thought that Leong just went away from her game plan a little bit because she got so emotional about the way the crowd was. And I thought, you know, people can, you know, we have the whole political debate of mask versus no mask and vaccine versus no vaccine and all that. And, you know, I guess we'll have to wait and see if there was any negative impact in terms of COVID from that, you know, with fans without masks in the stands. But from a competitive athletic standpoint, nothing better. This is a sport that was made to have fans in the stands. It's not a sport to be made in a television studio and watch on TV. This is one to have fans in the stands, and it was so much better with the fans. It wasn't even funny.
Kevin Ioli joining us. Kevin, last thought. What do you make of the YouTuber getting in the house, Jake Paul, and the next thing you know, he and DC are in each other's faces. He's also taking a lot of runs at Dana. Like, what does Dana make of that? Is that a slight annoyance to him, or is Dana going to have a real issue with this? And what did you make of DC and that YouTuber face-to-face?
I thought DC made a mistake. I mean, don't give him too much credit, right? I mean, we know, you know, he's nowhere near the kind of fighter that DC is, right? He hasn't accomplished anything in his life, nor will he ever accomplish anything in his life close to what DC has done. He's picking up on popularity that he gained from social media, and he's exploiting it. And you know what? I say God bless him. He's making a lot of money, and that's what he should do. And I think that's how Dana feels. Now, DC is proud of his sport, and he wants to defend the sport that made him rich and famous, and I understand that. But I think, you know, you're playing into Jake Paul's hands by doing what DC did. And I think if Daniel had to think about it, he would probably do it over again and do it differently if he had it to do over again. Wouldn't do that same thing, you know. But I give Jake Paul full marks. You know what? He's getting people to spend money at a time when a lot of people don't want to spend money on these kind of things. And God bless him. I mean, I'm not sure what happened to Ben Askren. That totally, totally stunned me in that fight. I thought Askren would win it. Not that I thought Askren was a great striker, Jim, but I thought that he would outlast him and then eventually wear him down. But, you know, give Jake credit. You know what? He's making a lot of money where he created an opportunity for himself where none existed, and you have to praise him for that.
I think so, man. He's running his playbook, and he's running it pretty well, and he's getting over. He's getting over, and he's getting paid. And even Dana said that. Hey, look, you'll make a few bucks. It's not what I do, but you'll make a few bucks. Kevin Ioli is an MMA insider for Yahoo Sports. He covers boxing as well. Kevin, great to have you on. Thank you so much for breaking it down. As you and I both pointed out, that was a wild, wild fight card in Jacksonville.
Thank you, Jim. I appreciate you, brother.
You too, Kevin. Great job, as always. Kevin Ioli.